Yo, and here we go with another episode of We Talk Music on the air and in your ear. Once again, I am Martin, joined by the King of the Castles, Mr. Brett Podcast. And Brett, I'm really excited to talk to today's guest.
That's right. We got a musician here, which is pretty typical in We Talk Music, I'll say. But it's awesome. He has been on the real world. But this is more important that we talk about his actual music and his new single, Clean Break. We have Andre Como. Andre, how are you?
I'm very well. Thanks for calling.
Well, we're happy to have you on the show, as I say, as Martin said. So let's first talk about Clean Break. I mean, it's the new single, and it's definitely it's got a little bit of a different vibe from some of the earlier music. So let's talk about it.
Sure. Yeah, it's a little more of a modern rock edge. The last EP was a lot more of, you know, sort of blues-based, straight-up-the-middle guitar rock. This new one is definitely more of a modern rock edge, and maybe shows a little more of my punk rock influences, perhaps.
So then, you know, when you're writing music, and I know that you've gone from rock to folk and now back to rock again, when you're writing music, like, how do you feel like it's the right song for the right time?
You know, it's I don't question anything I write. I think that's the best way to do it. I just create, and usually it pretty much it does all the work for me. Honestly, it becomes very apparent what, you know. I think a good song can be interpreted in many ways in most cases. But I do all of my writing on acoustic guitar. It's what I do. I sit around the house. I'm always strumming an acoustic guitar, and that's the majority of my songs are created on that instrument. But you know, lyrically, melodically, that often really dictates what the genre that I'll flesh out the song in. But you know, it's amazing to me that, you know, how many interpretations can be a good song can be translated in.
When it comes down to the lyrics and then your voice, like, how do you figure out how you're going to sing each song?
Well, usually the words themselves dictate how the delivery should be. In my case, if the words if I'm writing it from a somewhat dark and vengeful place, well, that's going to dictate how the melodic structure will be, and what voice I'll be using to convey that emotion. It's really, I try to really let the words dictate the action.
So Clean Break is also the name of the upcoming album, is it?
I'm sorry, it was a little fuzzy. Say it again.
Clean Break is also the name of your upcoming album, is it not?
Oh, it is, yes. The upcoming album is going to be titled Clean Break, correct.
And so is the song Clean Break, is it representative, approximately a good representation of what the entire album will sound like? Or will it be more of a potpourri of sounds?
Yeah, I would say it's a good representation in that, you know, it's you know, got a, as I mentioned previously, a more of a modern rock edge to it. And it's very up-tempo and... you know, kind of exciting. And that was, you know, I think that there's I like the lyrical message, and that also represents much of the current album as well.
So how would you say that you are different now, musically, especially from when you were doing Rain Dance?
Well, I'm much more of a, you know, when I was in Rain Dance, I was more of a collaborative songwriter. And, you know, we were we were a much younger band, just trying to find our place. And, you know, I was not a seasoned, I was not as seasoned a songwriter as I am now. And now I'm, you know, much more comfortable just, you know, completing a song from, you know, from beginning to end. And I have a very clear vision of what I want going into it, as opposed to back then when it was all very, you know, I was much more malleable back then. And now I'm, you know, not that I'm rigid, but as I mentioned, I have a clear vision of what I want.
So in the upcoming album, Clean Break, what are some of the other songs then besides the opening single? And by the way, I love the guitar riff to Clean Break, but what are some of the other songs that you want to highlight that you're really proud of?
Yeah. Well, I think that the, another song that we're probably going to be releasing as a single, we'll be releasing a song called Hurt. That is the tagline is I want you to hurt. it's definitely more of a sort of a vengeful track.
It may become my soundtrack of my life. It sounds like.
Yeah, that's it's a good one. It's a real a good rock song. Another rock song that I expect to be promoting and hopefully releasing a single for will be a song called Black Sheep, which clearly is very much the, you know, how one feels about, you know, it's kind of self-explanatory, you know, the feeling sort of somewhat different than the rest of the pack. And then lastly, I would say the other song that I would love to see some attention brought to would be the song Don't Follow the Lights, which is a more of a, I wouldn't say it's a ballad, but it's definitely more introspective and it reflects much of what we've all been going through this last year in these times of COVID.
So are you largely inspired by the events of your life or the songs autobiographical, or do you kind of simply find the emotion of the song and just tell the story?
Well, you know, I think all of my songs are written from personal experience, but I do also write in character, and I can, you know, I like to sometimes write with that in mind, you know, sort of using my own personal experience to perhaps color the story the way that I would want it told. But I, you know, there are times where I'm definitely writing in a character, and I think that, you know, a good writer should be able to, you know, write outside of their own out of their own viewpoint, to, you know, to be able to imagine things, you know, not everything should be a page out of your journal. You know, I definitely think that, you know, this was a lesson that, you know, one of my early producers taught to me, that, you know, that has stuck with me through the years, is that, you know, the truth should have nothing to do with a good song. You know, what I took from that is that, you know, you should be able to, you know, use your ideas outside of what actually happened, or, you know, you don't need to stick to what happened. It should be a, you know, it's a story, not a documentary.
Yeah, kind of give yourself license to embellish a little bit, you know,
exactly.
Because the song will be better in that regard, for sure.
Correct.
So then tell us about who you've got playing with you. Is it the same band on the whole album?
Yes. Yeah. I have a great rock band, starting with my producer and drummer, Darren Elpant. Darren and I have been working together for many years. He's a studio owner here in Los Angeles. And he and I have been playing together for many, many years in different projects. I suppose that when I put together this most current rock band, he was my go-to first choice, as he's a great rock drummer. We have a new bass player. This album, as opposed to our previous EP that we released in 2020, unfortunately, that bass player moved back to his place where he's from, Dallas, Texas, and we got a new bass player, another East Coast expat, a great bass player named Gary Wicks. Gary is a extremely creative and a great bass player who I'm thrilled to be playing with. We are also, for the first time, using the services of a second guitar player, a guy named Steve Dawson from Manhattan, and he lives here in Los Angeles now. All my guys are East Coast guys. It's funny how it is. We're living here in Los Angeles, and everyone's from the East Coast, except me. I'm from Detroit, Michigan, but I lived in New York and New Jersey from 1990, all of the 90s, and moved to LA at the end of the 90s. And I've been here ever since. So I'm definitely an honorary East Coast Metro New York type. All of my band, they're all these East Coast guys, and they all we all live here in Los Angeles now. So it's exciting, and I hope that we're able to bring some of that East Coast grittiness to the glitz and glamour of Los Angeles.
Yeah, because I was going to ask, like, how you felt like the East Coast inspired your music.
Well, there you have it. I mean, my whole band is from the East Coast. I spent most of my formative years on the East Coast, broke out of the East Coast from the TV show that I was on. We were centered in New Jersey and New York for many years. Our label was there. So I've unquestionably have been, and we all have collectively been shaped by the East Coast, in spite of the fact that most of us have lived here, in LA for 20 plus years now. So I think that, we're well-rounded in terms of our experience, and our, I think that, it's definitely, we've taken the best of both coasts.
Mm-hmm. So, when it comes to having a song and, like, how do you present that song to the band? And then how much did they add to each piece of music?
Good question. It varies. It definitely varies. I usually, bring in a song just by sort of noodling around with it before rehearsal or after, during a break, something like that, just kind of showing usually one or two of the members at a time, just sort of, getting their initial reaction. And it's usually just the guitar riff or the chord structure, just to, to familiarize. I really don't want to bring too much at once. Usually it's that kind of slower process. And then once we start jamming it for a little bit, if it's a chord progression, I really try not to tell everyone what to do. I'm very interested in what their instincts sort of, you know, what they instinctually will just come up with. If it's opposite to what I'm, you know, what I hear in my head, I'll say no, you know, don't put the beat on the one and the three, put on the two and the four or something like that. But it's usually, you know, I've chosen my band members wisely, and they're, you know, they know my style. They know what I'm looking for. And more often than not, their instincts are right on. And then, you know, occasionally, they've been able to even, you know, surprise me with stuff that I wouldn't have gone with, but I hear it and I love it. So that there's been that case as well. That's usually how I bring in a song. Kind of, I try to get an organic reaction, and I do like the collaborative efforts of good musicians and what they can bring to the table without me dictating, I want you to play this, that, this, X, Y, Z, you know.
You said that you were very much more collaborative when you were working with Riverdance. Is that kind of where this,
Rain
this
Dance.
Style? Sorry, what did I say? Riverdance?
Riverdance, yeah.
Sorry, Raindance. My mistake, Raindance. Pardon me?
Raindance wasn't as collaborative. What I meant by when I was, the songwriting process was collaborative in Raindance in terms of my songs and the stuff that I brought in. I wasn't as good a songwriter as I am now. So I needed the help, I think, back then, whereas I don't need the help now, but I like it. And I choose my people wisely for what they bring to the table. And so I'm interested to hear what their ideas are. And as I mentioned, if it's going to interfere with what I hear in my head or what I want to do, then I may step in and sort of steer them in the path that, you know, that I'm looking, you know, for. But I would say that, you know, the collaboration is important, and it gives some, you know, it definitely it gives them a sense of ownership as well, which I feel is very important in the creative process. No one wants to be, a robot being told what to do all the time.
So what is it you attribute to the fact that you're a better songwriter today than you used to be? What do you attribute that to?
Well, besides age and experience, which I think is, you know, the most important thing, experience. I would say, you know, starting with my love of Bob Dylan and learning the entire Beatles canon. I would say that just those two artists, that alone has, you know, broadened my horizon innumerably. One cannot overstate the effect that Bob Dylan had on me and helping me to find my creative voice. I think that, you know, I was just I think that, you know, because I grew up on a steady diet of you know, rock, hard rock specifically in the 70s when I was growing up, and it really wasn't until I, you know, sort of discovered the love of songwriting and songwriters, which is really what I like now. I used to love bands when I was growing up. It was all about the band. Now, bands, you know, I mean, I love a good band and everything, but really what gets me going are songs and songwriters. I mean, that's what I respect. That's what I, you know, that's what moves me more than anything. So it's the love of the song.
So then, you know, I read in another interview that you did that that you didn't get a chance to kind of test Clean Break out in front of an audience, and you like to do that. So I kind of want to know, when you test songs out in front of an audience, like, besides just the cheering, how would you change a song if the audience didn't like it? Would you just kind of dump it, or would you try to rework it?
I try to trust my own instincts, and that, you know, I guess really a lot of that, you know, testing a song in front of an audience is really more, I hate to even say this, but it's really, you know, if they love it, well, then it reinforces what I already believe. And if they don't love it, well, then they're just wrong. It's not exactly true, because I have changed certain things, and in some cases it's I might extend a song, or I may take out, you know, cut the fat and make it a much tighter arrangement without any sort of extended jams. It's not that, which really is not the case. I really do, songwriting wise, try to keep my arrangements very tight and very concise. The songwriters that I love, they've all done that. And they, you know, everyone from, you know, Bob Dylan, John Lennon, Paul McCartney, George Harrison. And then, you know, more recently, you know, guys like Elliott Smith, who I just have the highest respect for. He's been gone many years now, unfortunately, but his songs, I mean, they are devastating and just amazing. He was such a talent. And of my generation, I can't even think of someone who I believe is, you know, here it's been, you know, 15 years, maybe more, since he's been gone. And unfortunately for us, no one has even come close. His talent in songwriting was off the charts. And again, extremely concise arrangements, no fat on any of his songs.
I do think it's really interesting when you hear, like, somebody who is just a songwriter, and, you know, the turns of phrase that they use and stuff like that, but you know, the way that they're able to really encapsulate life, but in almost a poetic way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, that poet, it's not a coincidence that they are poets. And on top of that, you know, they're using melody and song structure and music as tools to elevate that poetry.
Now, it's
go ahead, Brad.
No, go ahead. I was gonna go off someplace else. So you go.
Well, so was I, but I was just wondering, as a songwriter, how would you feel about giving your music to somebody else to perform? Or is it simply too personal to you?
I would love it. I would love it. I mean, you know, I like to cover songs. Sometimes I do wildly different interpretations of songs that have been recorded by, you know, written and recorded by other people. And I would have absolutely nothing but love if someone covered my song and either completely interpreted it in a different way, or did a loyal cover the way that I wrote it. I work in music publishing, and you know, music publishing is all about the intellectual property. So I have a deep respect for that IP. And, you know, anybody that would cover one of my songs, I would be nothing but flattered. I think that, I think that that's just the most sincere flattery there is.
So then what I was going to ask is, like, Mont and I were talking earlier, just before we talked to you, about other singers and, like, the way they keep their voice. So I'm interested in, like, what you do to keep up your voice, and then what you think of, you know, other singers, like, say, maybe a Vince Neil, who I know has had a lot of problems with his voice of late.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I think it's really sad when a singer whom, you know, whose voice I love, sometimes through just hard living or no fault of their own, they lose that ability. It's very sad, and I've seen it, many times over. One of the acoustic musicians that I, you know, have just the most respect for, a guy named Tony Rice, who's known as more of a bluegrass guitar player, had a beautiful voice and just, you know, such an amazing voice that he lost some sort of medical condition. And, you know, he had this wonderful voice that he used to sing with on all of his albums. And then one day he just woke up and sounded like a frog. He couldn't even his speaking voice. It was gravel, and it was a nightmare. And I think it was, you know, as I said, a medical condition, the name is escaping me. But, you know, to me, it's like losing a limb or something. Equally devastating. It's I just feel terrible for these singers that that their voice fails them in their later years. But going back to, you know, my Bob Dylan, you know, he doesn't sound like he used to and can't sing like he used to, but he's managed to carve out a new direction for his limited vocal ability. And, you know, and what it comes down to is that, you know, he can make the most with what he has. And at any given time, that's what he's done. And he's reinvented himself so many times successfully that, you know, the respect is off the charts for that artist because he's been able to reinvent himself so successfully so many times, and given his limitations vocally now, you know, I mean, you know, he is not the singer that he once was and couldn't do it, but yet some of his most recent records have some of his best songs, and it's a testament to his talent, his artistry, and you know, I can't even, you know, I can only hope that that I can take a page from that playbook.
Well, he's definitely lived a life. There's no question about that. When it comes to being able to write lyrics based on what you have lived, then there's no question that he's lived that.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, he often writes in character and writes about things that he didn't live. But as a writer, he's just so talented that he can, you know, he can let you see through those eyes as well.
So then, you know, of course, you were you've been good friends with Tom Hazard, and so I'm interested in like, you know, with Tom suggesting that he plans to leave the industry, like what you think of that, and because I know that he's done so much for so many people.
Yeah, I think that I don't want to. I'm hopeful that Tom is more just stepping away. I think that maybe he might be being a little fatalistic about that, leaving the industry. I think that, you know, we've all been there, been so fed up with the and frustrated with what is immediately happening around you that you just want to give up, throw your hands and say, you know, I'm done with this. But eventually, you know, so that immediate sort of crisis subsides and you, you know, you kind of come to your senses perhaps, and you get back doing with what you feel you want to do. If Tom does decide that he doesn't want to continue with the music business, that's okay. But we've all seen the farewell tours, yes. You know, come and go, and then they come back for a second and third helping. So I wouldn't count them out quite yet.
Yeah, there's no question that there's a million farewell tours. I actually just saw that Whitesnake was planning a farewell tour, and I'm like, oh boy, oh, that's tons of them. Yeah.
Another one.
Yes, another one. We'll see how long that lasts for sure.
Right. I mean, you know, and that's, you mentioned the, you know, I know that David Coverdale has expressed some of his, you know, vocal difficulties, you know, and, you know, some of these guys, they relied on those vocal acrobatics. And how could anyone be expected to do that at 70 plus years? You know, Paul Stanley, I mean, one of the greatest frontmen ever. And to expect that, you know, that he should be doing that at 70 something years old, it's not tenable. Which, you know, kind of brings us back to the whole reinventing yourself and doing things, which Paul has done recently. And he's got another band, you know, in a different genre.
Yeah.
Music.
Soul Station. Yeah, that's right.
Playing some of the soul music that he grew up on. And I think that's awesome. And that is exactly what someone should do as an artist if they can't bring it. I think a great example of that is Robert Plant. Robert Plant cannot do, you know, he is not the singer of the Immigrant Song anymore, but what he is reinventing himself with Alison Krauss and producer T-Bone Burnett and creating one of the best records of his career, Raising Sand. I mean, I just think that, you know, I love what he is doing now. And it's totally different than Led Zeppelin, who, you know, my one of my all-time favorite bands, Led Zeppelin. But, you know, I mean, that level of vocal acrobatics is a young man's game. And hey, you know, if you can do it like Steven Tyler at 70 plus, well then, you know, Godspeed, and you should do it. But if you can't do it, there's no shame in that. And there's no shame in reinventing yourself and doing something totally different, because that's what a good artist should do.
Yeah, for sure. Now, you know, when we talk about, I know you have some live shows coming up, and which must be super nice to have those booked. You know, what's an Andre Como live show look like now?
Well, you know, I like to, you know, I can still bring it, and I'm going to be bringing it, you know, 100%, 110%. Every time I get up there, and that is, you know, that's a promise. And you had asked me before, like, you know, what do I do to, you know, keep the voice in shape and everything? And, you know, I don't smoke cigarettes anymore. I drink very sporadically, drink alcohol. I heart, you know, just limited, maybe a glass of wine occasionally with dinner. You know, I try to live healthy, and you know, it's funny. My lifestyle has changed quite a bit. I have a 4-year-old daughter now. I'm married. It's not that I live in the slow. I don't you know, drive in the slow lane, but I definitely am much more conscious of my health and just sort of, you know. I'm very aware of you know, of what's on the horizon and what I need to do to stay healthy, so that, you know, I can you know, bring it night after night. And that's, you know, so you know, what's a show like nowadays? Well, it's, you know, it's 110%, maybe just without the maybe without the chemicals.
Now, when you got out of the house of the first Real World season, you know, could you have ever imagined, A, that you would have been going back, but where you are now today?
Well, no, I never thought that I was headed towards, you know, sort of this, you know, clear-headed, sober, you know, being a parent, being a responsible member of society, and kind of, you know, and a music executive as well. I think that I was definitely more just one track minded in terms of, like, I just want to be a rock star. And back then, that was my whole life. Everything revolved around it. And what I didn't really take into account was the need to, you know, round out other areas of your life to be a better person. And so that you know, really was, you know, I'd say the biggest difference than how it is today.
So then, you know, you obviously your music from both Ray Dance and now your new music like Clean Break and stuff was in the show. How much assistance is that to your career?
Well, you know, back in the 90s, MTV spoke to our generation, Gen X, directly, and was the only network to do so. They were, you know, so much of their programming was sort of integral to our formative years. And we really did grow up on a steady diet of what MTV fed us. And now, you know, much of that is has waned. I don't think that, you know, anyone, I think that, you know, the proliferation of media, there's so much media now, and it comes from so many different areas. There's streaming, there's internet, there's television, satellite radio. We're just, you know, we're inundated with information now from all areas, from every direction. So there isn't that one pinpoint direction that we used to get most of our information from. You know, back then we had just a couple of networks and a couple of cable channels, and really the only one that spoke to us was MTV, or, you know, maybe a couple others for a time, but really that was the main source. So, you know, that was where a lot of my generation got, you know, their information from, their music, so that was a huge boost to Rain Dance's visibility. Nowadays, you know, being that, you know, my the reunion show is on a streaming platform that is subscription only, that is very it's not terribly limited in scope, but it's, you know, not everyone has it. And I know a lot of my friends haven't even seen it still, because they don't have the subscription to the platform. And you know, so it's all very splintered now. But, you know, I think that, you know, fans of the show have been very vocal about it, and they're very supportive. and they've always been very supportive. Having said all that, I'm not convinced that, you know, a television show is always the best vehicle for music. Although even today, much of how a band gets broken, in the success, sometimes a high profile placement can really break a band. But it's not always the best vehicle for music. And I really think that, you know, the best way that a band can persevere is to just get out there and play shows and prove it night after night.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you have to develop a fan base, you know, be active on social media. I think that helps. But yeah, I mean, certainly right place, right time. But the more that you can play and the more that people can get out there to see you and actually appreciate you, I think that's going to give you more than anything.
Right, right. That proves it beyond a shadow of doubt.
Awesome. Well, Andre, we thank you so much for taking the time and spending it with us. We want to give you the chance to tell everybody where they can keep up with you, where they can find all the new music and everything like that.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And it was great speaking with you both. You can follow us and the new band at AndreComoMusic.com. We have some shows coming up. We're going to be playing the Viper Room in Los Angeles on September 9th. We've got some other things coming up, but I would definitely say that's far enough in advance that's going to be a fun one. Some other road dates coming up. The new album Clean Break will be out before the end of the summer, as well as some more music videos and perhaps a streaming event before the end of the year as well.
Awesome. Well, definitely sounds like you're finding ways to keep busy. So we do enjoy your music, and we look forward to hearing the album when it comes out. So once again, Andre, thank you so much, and we wish you nothing but the best in the future.
Thank you, sir. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Pleasure was mine.
Awesome. All right. Well, we will talk soon. All right.
Okay. Bye.
Bye now.
Screaming, I'm a vengeance, lucid dreaming over the mountain. The mystic spells meditating on the stars. Hear me, promise a warning, fear thee. The darkness coming, mesmerized under restless skies. dream.